I'm on LinkedIn and active on there and connected with Mike on there. So if you can find me that way and
Yeah, I mean, he's Canadian, but it's all friend shoring, right? Is that what we call it? Friend shoring?
Hey, Nick.
What's up, Mike?
What's going on, buddy?
Ready to record, dude.
Yeah. Well, I got a guest today that's going to make you laughy.
Oh, man. Come on. That's ridiculous.
If the sound of a machine tool removing metal gets your blood pumping, then you are Metalworking Nation. This is Making Chips, where we talk all things metalworking, engineering and design, production and tooling combined with business best practices, technology, marketing, news, and new media for manufacturing professionals. Here are your hosts. Let's make some chips.
Mike, we're here.
Nick, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. We're going to have a fun episode today. We get to talk a little bit about some technology that actually helps manufacturing leaders. So I'm super pumped.
How is it that we're going to have talk about some new technology and we can't get our camera?
I know we've been doing video and like something's going on with this tool that we're using. So whatever. Audio only.
Nobody gets to see our pretty faces this time.
It's all good. My face looks like crap. I have this, what is it? 20-day-old child, or yeah, 1 month old. Yeah, March 10th. So he's 1 month old.
Yeah, we haven't recorded since then.
Really? Man,
that's crazy. How is mama and baby?
They're great. He's sleeping all the time, except for when it's the middle of the night and he wakes up a few times. My wife, his mom, is awesome because she's like, you know, I think some wives are like, hey, we're switching off. You're doing diaper changes. You're doing this. And she's just like, no, I got this. You stay asleep. So I told her how awesome I think that is this morning.
You know, some dads just volunteer to do that.
In my defense, if I do wake up, I always walk in there. I'm like, hey, can I do anything? She's like, yeah, you can go away. I'm good. Like, all right, I got you. So
good. You ought to be able to handle that.
Yeah, yeah. I do okay. Things are fine. Four kids when you're in a position like I'm in, which is pretty busy and requires a lot of travel. It's just a testament to my wife being pretty awesome and being able to be a leader in her own right. So
awesome. Well, be able to do what we do.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking of, you got a segment picked out for this one or what?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot going on. We haven't done one in a while. I'd like to hear about this leadership spotlight of someone that you've got in your organization that's done some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, let's shine the spotlight on Robin Moore.
In this community of manufacturing leaders, there's always somebody doing something amazing, but most of the time, it goes unseen. Making Chips wants to change that, one leadership story at a time. It's time to give credit to the best in the business. It's time to learn from our peers so we can all rise together. It's time for Making Chips to shine the manufacturing leadership spotlight.
So yeah, it's pretty awesome, Mike. I've been trying to get you to come out and get a tour of all the expansions that we've had, but Hennig is in the machine tool business. That's how people know us, but we have this division that's like become literally, I don't know, almost 10 times the size of our $30 million Hennig business.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's mind-boggling. Every time I look out the window, there's another piece of ground that we're breaking and building buildings and adding machines. And we've talked a little bit about it, but you know, really the leader behind all this growth, one of the leaders behind it, probably the main guy driving is a guy named Robin Moore. He's our former head of engineering for Hennig, and now he is the president of Hennig Power Protection. So we call it power protection because instead of us fabricating enclosures for machine tools or chip conveyors for machine tools or machine protection for machine tools, we are actually building the entire fuel tank and the entire shell around these huge power engines, these standby power engines for backup power. One of the reasons why we should shine the spotlight on him right now is my father and him are in Germany, and they just yesterday received the Supplier of the Year for Rolls-Royce Power Systems. And
very cool.
So it's a pretty big award. There was like 2,000 suppliers. We were one of six that won it for our category, or for various categories. We won our category, and it's incredible. We're able to have basically perfect on-time delivery, and they're really happy with our quality, and we're growing like crazy. We just made a video like a year ago about how we had 300,000 square feet, and now we have to update the graphic on it for 800,000 square feet. And We're hiring 250 employees, and Robin has just been able to scale his leadership as this business scales and, you know, going from head of engineering to this and surviving cancer in the process. If you talk to Robin, he has to talk with a whisper because he had some cancer in his throat. And so, like, just an incredible guy. We're super blessed to have him. And I don't like to, like, toot our own horn very often, but he deserves the leadership spotlight because that's a pretty awesome award for us to win.
That's a great story. And congrats, Robin.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll make sure he gets a listen to this one. I don't know if he listens to Making Chips, but he might want to check this episode out. So
yeah, I think he should.
Well, cool. Hey, we've got another leader in this episode, a guy that you know and that you've invited. Maybe you could introduce him for us.
Yeah. So I'm going to give just a brief background on how I met him. So a couple of weeks ago, Nick, I think you've seen here in the shop, I've got a 1959 Ford F-100 that we're several years into restoring because we work on it in between jobs.
It can't be your main focus every day at Hill.
Right. Unfortunately.
Right.
My wife's always asking me, when's that going to be done? Well, if I could get everybody to work on it for several weeks straight, it would be done, but can't do that. So we're putting in a electronic fuel ignition system. Then we can put this digital dash. Well, 1959 Fords did not come with digital dashes.
Oh, really? So, what a surprise. Right.
So rather than destroy the original dash, we wanted to make a new dash. And because it was made out of an old stamp and die model, getting a model of that was difficult. So drawing that up to machine it was difficult. Mm-hmm. So I put a question out.
Talk about a crazy reverse engineering project, right? Jeez.
Right. So I had put a question out on LinkedIn, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, about we have a laser scanner that if I could scan this, how can I turn it into a model? Well, had lots of feedback, and particularly Ira Laffey with Rapid 3D.
Oh, Laffey? Ira Laffey? Right. He's probably so sick of hearing that, sure. But it is spelled exactly like laugh with a Y. So
yeah, so Ira reached out. We kind of went back and forth a few times and got him some scan data. And I was so impressed with the whole process. And it wasn't something we'd ever done before. I wanted to have Ira on to talk a little bit about 3D scanning technology and what they do. So Ira, welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome.
Oh, thanks, Mike. Thanks, Nick. And geez, a great leadership spotlight, Nick. And congratulations on number four.
Yeah, that's thanks, man. Fantastic. Yeah, appreciate it.
When I saw the post on LinkedIn, you know, it kind of immediately piqued our interest. But basically, we're Rapid 3D. We're based in Western Canada. And our company, for the last 15 years, specializes in the use and application of 3D scan data for design, inspection, reverse engineering, quality control, and NDT type applications, inspection of corrosion and wear analysis and that kind of stuff. So we're in 3D scanning all day, every day. And so when I saw Mike's post there, we also have a lot of guys around here and gals that are quite interested in automotive aftermarket and cool projects like with Mike's Ford there. And so my dad's actually got a 49 F1 Ford as well. His is all original. So he's got the original dash in his. But yeah, no, it just seemed like a cool project and something that we could help out with. And that's how we met. And it's been...
So did you start the company? You said 9 years ago, Ira? Was it 9 years? Oh, 15 years ago? I'm sorry.
Yeah. 15 years ago, Nick. Yeah, I started the company 15 years ago. That was kind of right when 3D scanning was pretty early and new, you know, and companies weren't exactly sure how or why I would use a 3D scanner. I think a lot of people were pretty used to seeing like a Romer or Ferro arm, mm-hmm. you know, with a touch probe kind of thing for taking measurements and doing inspection work or a traditional type CMM. But 3D scanning was pretty new and at the time and 15 years ago. And I had a background in history with a company previous to that, you know, where we did a lot of 3D modeling and animation for kind of industrial assembly and disassembly kind of processes and things. And so when I saw a 3D scanner for the first time, it was a Creaform handheld 3D scanner. I was just like, wow, like you can scan something and then have it like digitally on your computer screen to work with instead of having to go back and forth to the shop and take measurements and write everything down and then try and create a CAD model from all of those traditional type measurements. When you're doing things that are prismatic in shape and you can use a caliper and a height gauge and all those kinds of things, it can be pretty straightforward. But if you've got any kind of freeform geometry or complex shapes, single point or traditional measurement is tough. And so that's where a 3D scanner really comes in handy. And so, yeah, I started it 15 years ago and we're based in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And yeah,
so it was the inspiration from like using the technology that inspired you to make that entrepreneurial leap. We've been doing so many episodes on entrepreneurship. I'm really curious to like, what was the catalyst for you? Like, hey, I might want to start a business and own a business in that space.
I had already started and sold a business before I started Rapid 3D. So like an entrepreneur, we started Mecha Media Group in 1995, sold it in 2000, and then kind of worked for the company that bought it for a number of years, and then started Rapid 3D in 2009. So I was already trying to do a lot of this stuff the more traditional way. What we'd used to do, like for reverse engineering or to create 3D CAD models for our animation purposes, where we would take like drawing, like just a 2D sectional drawing of a pump or an assembly or whatever it happened to be. And then we would just reconstruct it using the dimensions and a scale and, you know, all that kind of stuff in AutoCAD and 3D Studio Max. And so you can kind of get a reasonable facsimile. It wouldn't be like manufacturing quality at that time, what we were doing. It was more for represent kind of visual kind of purposes and animation and that kind of thing. So I'd been involved with 3D since 1995, which is pretty early days in the whole process. But
There's that Canadian company.
Yeah. So like when I saw it. Yeah. So you can't get that out of me. But so when I did see a 3D scanner, it just made me think like, wow, it just would make that process so much easier. So I will admit my entrepreneurial journey with Rapid 3D began before I really truly understood how or why people would want to 3D scan stuff. I was much more the cart in front of the horse on this one. And so I leaped in with both feet, just thinking that it's got to be a natural and people would want to do it. It took me about 5 years to figure out that it wasn't as easy and natural. I always like to say, like, the momentum that I had at the time was the equivalent of paddling your canoe under living room carpet. Like, it just was a grind every day. But yeah, once the technology got a little bit better, scanners got better, the computing power, the reverse engineering, the inspection software, the NDT software got better, that's when we started to see a lot more momentum. And in full transparency, Rapid 3D is also a distributor reseller of the Creaform line of 3D scanners. And so Creaform is really supportive in the early days as well, like in terms of just providing a lot of training and support. And we always had the latest and greatest scanning technologies that were available and that kind of stuff. So it took a while. It was a slow boil, I would say. But yeah, definitely slowly grew to the team that we have today. Nothing like the size of what you guys are operating there, Nick. But, you know, we got 15 full-time people here. You know, we're dealing with 3D scan data all day, every day.
I'm curious, just because I have a background in different technology, but I always like seeing the adoption of technology. What have costs done from 2009 to now? I assume that was probably a hurdle early on.
I mean, and as business owners, you guys know it's all about the return on investment, really. What can I do with this tool? So the scanners, I think the quality, the metrology grade systems, the ones that are ISO and VDI, VDE compliant, and all this kind of stuff, they're always going to have a certain price attached to it. The knockoffs and the kind of entry level equipment that come in, are you really going to pass or fail a part that you've made based on something that you don't know whether it's accurate or not, right? And so that kind of, what we've seen though, is the equipment has just gotten so much more, so much faster, is more accurate, it's easier to use. So I think the prices, they've kind of stabilized, or with inflation lately, you know, everything's gotten more expensive. So we're no different. The cost of the scanners has gone up, but you can do so much more with them now than you could in a lot shorter time. And you guys are on the machining side, you know, a challenge with scanning was always the shiny nature of all the parts that you had to scan now. And so the 3D scanners that we have now with blue laser lines and all this kind of stuff, they can handle chrome and shiny and that kind of stuff really well. So there was a time where you couldn't even scan a machine part, not without some powder or prep or something.
Because you had to get rid of all the,
with like, the latest scanners now.
Glare, shine. Yeah, all the shine.
The shine. Yeah, the shine, the glare. You know, exactly. Yeah, it would, if you scan something with some of those old scanners, Nick, like literally it looked like it exploded. Like, you know, it's just the noise from the reflection. If you can measure anything from it. Yeah. So, but price is always, you know, it's always a discussion. It's a competitive market. I would say there's more and more competition out there now than ever. And there's more alternatives. There's the traditional ARMs and CMMs. And then a lot of the handheld scanners and stuff that have come along are starting to get accurate enough that they rival some of that stuff. So a lot of people are like trying to debottleneck their CMM, for example, by using a laser scanner that can potentially, it's quicker, easier, get a quick scan and then save the CMM for the jobs that are a higher degree of accuracy required and that kind of stuff. There's a lot going on there, but I mean, price is always an issue. People are always going to want to ensure that they're getting a good deal and that they're going to get a return on the investment, right? But something though that we don't talk about a lot, and this speaks directly to what you were, like the question you put out to us, Mike, initially was, I've got a scanner and I've got scan data, but I can do inspections, but I don't know how to reverse engineer or create a CAD model from the scan data. And so we get a lot of that too. Like, we didn't even do the scan for you. You did that yourself. You just sent us the data and we were able to create the CAD model for you. So it's really all about what you do with the scan.
Yeah, Mike, why did you have a scanner in the first place? Because you own it, or did you rent it or borrow it from somebody? Or?
Matter of fact, at IMTS in 2022, that was on our shopping list. And it was, as Ira just referenced, you know, to kind of free up capacity and inspection. So there's a variety of parts we make that the tolerances allow for a quick scan rather than running across the CMM. So for us, a lot of it really was a time saving. And then, you know, the report, the inspection data and the reporting that we get out of it are pretty remarkable too. So we've been able to provide some really good detailed reporting on parts, especially maybe on some first article stuff that we can do that with our CMM also. This is much quicker.
Sure. Yeah. It's more like what I'm hearing is that your particular use case is like a metrology time savings use case.
Sure.
Probably not as precise as a CMM, but maybe you didn't need that.
Right.
And then Ira was just referencing like the reverse engineering. Like maybe you're trying to do a quick reverse engineer of something in the field so that you can make a replacement part or something, right?
Right. So we knew we could do that with the right software. That software is expensive. We don't reverse engineer very much at all. Mm-hmm. Occasionally we have somebody, either an existing customer or maybe even a walk-in customer that has a part. They're wondering if we, you know, it's 50 years old and the company's out of business and they're wondering if we can make another one. But it doesn't happen much. So we didn't invest in the software to be able to reverse engineer. For me, the connection was I knew I could get scan data and I knew there's people out there that could turn that into something, or I thought there was. Mm-hmm. And posing that question and meeting Ira, he proved that that was correct, that we could. And it was remarkably accurate. And we're machining the dash today, actually.
I'm sure you're going to make another post like a before and after, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I'll have it out there and
tag the episode, tag Ira. That'd be sweet. So, okay. So this process of, you get like some data, but you don't get a beautiful SolidWorks CAD model or anything, right? You don't get a step file from the end result, and you definitely don't get something that you can just plug into your machine tool and make a part with. So when Mike said like, yeah, he could have bought that software for himself, but it was expensive. And then obviously that's something you guys are doing as a service. In fact, that's what I thought your business was, is primarily the service. I didn't even realize you were a distributor of the scanning equipment. Mike, I guess my question is, if I buy the software, is it like a turn in a key and it's just unlocked and I can get the right file type that I need? Or is there still like skill and an art to taking that scatterplot data and turning it into a workable file or something I can, you know, make a program off of?
Yeah, great question. And going back to what Mike, I would say like the project that we did is a great example because it was kind of a combination between reverse engineering and design, because we had Mike's team also scan where the dash goes, like how it fits into mm-hmm. the truck. And so we had both sides. We had the backside of the dash, but we had the dash, and then we had the interface point. So it's not just about reverse engineering, but it's also about design. We do a lot of work where you scan the part of something that you want to design something to fit to, so that you know whatever you're making is going to fit correctly mm-hmm. and work correctly, right? And so that's part of the process as well. It's because I will say it's rare that people just come in and or ask us to copy mm-hmm. parts. You know what I mean? There's always a reason. There's always something around that. But in terms of the process, so people typically will say, hey, I need a 3D scan of this part. Oh, okay. You need a 3D scan so you can work with an STL file. No, well, actually, I'm looking for, well, I guess I need a solid model. Like, oh, okay, like, you know, an IGES step or Parasol or something like that. Yeah, well, I actually like a SolidWorks model with a feature tree intact so that I can make some changes and this and that and the other. You kind of work through this process. But most people are looking for a nice mm-hmm. CAD model to go to production or manufacturing. How you get there, you start with a 3D scan. And the software that we use allows you to interact with that 3D scan data in an intelligent way so that you can extract the features, do cross-sections, extract profiles, and create a CAD model that you know is accurate relative to the scan, which you know is accurate to the real part. And then from that, we can transfer that into Inventor, SolidWorks, or whatever, Fusion, whatever people are using these. I think, Mike, you guys are using Fusion, I think. Whatever people are using for their manufacturing process. It usually starts with the scan data for us, and then we kind of work with that. There's a company, 3D Systems, makes a reverse engineering software tool called Geomagic DesignX, which is basically a software tool designed specifically for creating CAD models from scan data.
Like, let's say I had the software and I had the scanner. Obviously, your team does this all day, every day. Most people who run machine shops don't, and they don't have a person who does that. So is it pretty steep learning curve to know how to convert scan data to CAD model, or is it something anybody could figure out? I mean, obviously you're trying to sell services to people, but really, I mean, how hard is it for a good engineer to figure that out? So
we have many customers that we've done work for that we sell the scanners and software to and train them to do it themselves. And typically, if you have somebody in-house that is good at CAD, like 3D CAD, so SolidWorks or Inventor or whatever you guys are using, they have the skills to be able to do the scan to CAD modeling. There's a different kind of a process when you're working from scan data, but typically if somebody has anybody that knows how to do SolidWorks, for example, it's a couple of days, 2-3 days of training max to be able to reverse engineer, create CAD models from scan data or create designs, new fresh designs using scan data as the basis or platform. So yeah, so it's pretty typical if you have an engineer or engineering technologist or a polytechnic grad that has some 3D solid CAD modeling background or experience, using any of the scan to CAD modeling tools is a pretty easy step for them.
Here's some quick math for the manufacturing leader. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you get to keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, borrowing, it feels like everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform for one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, and it can be accessed from anywhere. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. There's a reason over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/chips. That's netsuite.com/chips.
Hey, Ira, I'm curious, putting the technology out in the market side of things, you know, reselling the scanners and the software and all that. What's the coolest implementation you've seen, kind of most out of the box, like really change someone's business processes?
Oh, man. Oh, geez. You know, we hear so many times people doing, like, from a design perspective, the typical, we'll fab something up, we'll go out to the machine or whatever, we'll fit it up, we'll slot the holes, we'll cut that piece off and re-weld it on, we'll go back and forth 5 or 6 times and see if it, try and iterate until it makes it fit. And so the applications where people are like, you do a scan, create the CAD model from the scan data, you fab it up, build it, machine it, whatever you're going to do, and it just fits. Like, it just works. I mean, there's no iteration. There's no multiple prototypes. Like, it just works. And so we have that pretty regularly. But I don't know, like, there's one application where we had a, and we've had to prove this out many, many, many times, Mike, where people are just like, I don't believe it. How does that work? Or how does that process work? But that's pretty cool. We've also created some pretty unique workflows on the automation side of things, like automating inspections and inspection workflows, like for things that need to be done over and over and over again, and complicated stuff like weld profiles and like calculating a weld profile every inch over the length of a weld and that kind of stuff. And really kind of complex and weird things like that, where they'll scan, do a big scan, and then we'll create automated macros to extract certain dimensions and stuff from the scan data, things that you just couldn't do manually without the scan. So I don't know, our customers, most of this stuff, we get asked on a daily basis, can we do this? Or would we be able to do that? Or what do you think of this? And so our team really is just here trying to figure out how to solve.
Yeah, just tons of application support.
So our mission is, we exist to solve complex measurement challenges that empower confident decision-making. That's what we do all day, every day.
Nick, as he was talking, I was thinking, gosh, think about the application in some of your company.
Yeah, you know, I mean, my gears are turning right now. So like, actually, we've helped you with some weight cover repair in the past, right? Like,
right.
Ira, you're familiar with CNC machine tools, I'm sure. You've got applications that deal with them, but I don't know if you ever deal with actual components of the machine tool itself, you know? And so if you're familiar with like a telescopic steel way cover on a CNC mill or lathe, right? As the machine's making chips, it's creating this terrible environment. And if that stuff gets into your precision ways and ball screws, it's expensive and your machine's going to lose accuracy and it's just not a good thing for you. So those steel way covers and bellows and machine protection elements are what we make at Hennig. And people drop a tool on them, they drop a workpiece on them, they drop a vise on them, whatever, right? And it dents it up and it makes it, it's like a telescope with a dent in it. It's not telescoping anymore. And so it could shut down production really at the end of the day and be really expensive. So what we do is we pull the damaged covers off and we take some measurements, length, width, height of the ways, how far are the ways from each other? Are there any interferences? What's the compressed length? What's the extended length? And at the end of the day, if we get a pretty simple data sheet done, then that's really all our engineers need to work with, you know, maybe some photos and stuff. But what we find is our sales guys out in the field, you know, they'll get called into a shop and they'll be like, you know, the machine's working right now. Can you come back in 3 hours? I'm like, that's not a good use of my sales guy's time to sit there for 3 hours till the machine shuts down. And he might only have 20 minutes to look in there, you know, and there might be all sorts of obstacles for him to even be able to go take measurements. So we thought about, what about using a 3D scanner? And we've actually tried it before, but we got stuck at that. Okay, I can't actually use this. It's not a CAD model. That's where we got stuck. So it's funny, like, I'm going to send this to the guy who runs the machine protection business unit. And I think he ought to connect with you because I don't know what the service costs compared to the replacement part or whatever, but it'd be nice if we could just get the CAD model at the end of the day.
Yeah. And in that case, the process that we would employ in that scenario, Nick, which is actually a really interesting one because we do a lot of that kind of work, not specifically on machine tools, but that scenario exists in a lot of different areas. So you'd scan the environment real quickly, right? Then what you do is do your CAD designs on top of the scan data. And that's, we would use the scan data as a basis for the design.
So it's almost like,
instead of
I'm an artist, right? Like I was a fine artist growing up. So it's almost like having like transfer paper. You know, you've got something that to work with, like a light drawing that you can make a more accurate drawing on top of.
I think that's a great way of putting it. To me, it's like having a digital version of the machine tool on your screen as you're doing your design, right? So all the bolt, if there's any existing pickup points, any existing mounting locations, if there's any existing bolts or configurations or angles, or I would scan it in its both configuration, you know, extended and compressed so that you know what your limits are. And then we would just have that on the screen when we're doing the design.
So if you've got, you know, 20 minutes to get in and look at a machine tool that's maybe the cover is so damaged they've already pulled it off and they're running it naked, or maybe you got to get it off there, but you don't have a ton of time. You don't have all day to sit there and make a big sketch. Is the skill of scanning challenging? Can anyone learn it in an hour of training or a few hours of training, like how to hold the scanner, how to take the scan, or is that pretty challenging?
Actually, Nick, on that note, though, like the scenario where you have your salespeople in the field. So in the mining industry in Alberta and BC, we have customers that make wear parts for the mining industry that have salespeople with scanners as they travel. And if they get the opportunity, they scan what they need to scan. So the salespeople are doing the scanning and then bringing it back to the engineering team to do whatever they need to do with it. So that scenario is being employed. And scanning, I think, is the easy part of the process. And usually where people run into issues isn't with scanning or getting the scan data. It's with what you do after with the scan data. And like I said, you know, if you've got people that are experienced in 3D CAD, any CAD package, doesn't matter. If they can work in 3D, they're going to be able to work with the tools that you need to create the designs or reverse engineering with scan data. But no, we do have customers that just have their salespeople out there doing the scan.
Well, I think there's two follow-ups I want to do. I want to get you on a call that we won't record with just our team for our application at Hennig. And then I want to do an episode like this one's the journey from scan to CAD to part. And I want to add one more. The journey from scan to CAD to part to automation, like you brought up, because we have another off show we call Lights Out. And I think it would be a really good kind of sequel to this to see how this scan can really help support automation. Like you mentioned, automated inspection and even informing the manufacturing process behind the scan. You know, the scan goes ahead of the manufacturing process. So I think that would be really cool. But is that where you see as like future trends with this technology? Or is there something that we're not even thinking of that you want to kind of share as we begin to close out the episode?
Well, I think automation for sure is something, you know, people, rather than having a person, you know, like a CMM is automated, right? You just program it and you can let it run its program on a part. But what's happening, you know, if you have systems now that can be more fully automate the process and they're a lot faster than a CMM, like with scan data and scanning. So AQC, automated quality control, and automation is a big thing. I think it'll be interesting to see how AI is employed into quality control and stuff as well. Like, how smart can you make these systems to know and understand what could be wrong, or what kind of feedback loop can you get into a system where if you do an inspection, that it starts to inform the machines to make
the adjustments that need to be machine made. Machine learning, right? Parts pass. Is that the word? Like, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Machine learning. And it's such a buzzword right now. And so you don't know what's real and what's not and how it's all going to evolve. But I think those are some pretty interesting areas. Which would be really cool on the AI side is if you did a scan and the software was smart enough to recognize all the features in the scan data and create the CAD models automatically. Like, I know people are working on that. Like, so you don't have to manually construct the CAD model from the scan data. Like, the software is smart enough to recognize a plane, a cone, a sphere, you know, at least extract all the features from the part, like the main features and stuff. So there's some things that are design intent, like what's the design intent of this part? And then maybe try and figure out how it needs to be modeled or made and that kind of stuff. So there's I don't know, it's going to be an interesting, you know, we've been at it 15 years. I'm sure the next 15 years will be a big change over time as well and won't get anything like it does right now, I'm sure.
Yeah, so Ira, so exciting, so interesting, all of this really, especially where it's headed. You mentioned the past 15 years and then the next 15 years. It's going to be this exponential growth of the advancement in technology. It's not going to be the same as the past 15 years in anything in the world. You know, this isn't like a linear growth thing we got going on. So I love making chips because my mind is constantly blown with like the type of people we have on and the type of technologies that we're able to review. And this is just another one I'm excited to continue to learn about. And so for anyone who listened to this episode, you know, if you learned something, if you've got an application that you're excited about, something that you're interested in, shoot us a message. info@makingchips.com gets to all of us, all the hosts. I'm sure you can reach out to Ira. Ira, why don't you plug like how they can connect with you?
Easiest way, rapid3d.ca or rapid3d.ca is our website. And through LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn and active on there and connected with Mike on there. So if you can find me that way and
Yeah, I mean, he's Canadian, but it's all friendshoring, right? Is that what we call it? Friendshoring? Yeah.
And if you want a 25% discount on everything you do, just send it to Canada.
I love it. That's great. Hey, you know, speaking of friends, if you're friends of the show, please do us a favor. All we ask is if you liked it, rate it, give it a review, let us know what you liked about it. And then most importantly, send it to somebody, refer it. The three R's, rate, review, and refer it to somebody. Like if you think of a buddy you know who's got a shop or an employee or your boss or whoever who's got like a use for this technology, send this episode to them and yeah, let's start to keep this thing moving. So Mike, you want to sign us off? We end every episode the same way. How do we do that?
Well, first I want to thank Ira. Ira, that was great. Mike, you got my wheels turning when you were talking there at the end. Pretty cool stuff. And I know why we bought our scanner, but now my wheels are turning. So again, thank you for being on the show. Nick, if you are not making chips,
you are not making money. Bam.